We will call the meeting to order. Can I get a attendance roll, please? Sherry, are you here?
Present, Frieden Rich.
John Moore, present.
Wallace Roedecker, present.
Tom Hammond, present.
Tom, turn your microphone on.
Eric Woolery, present.
Michelle Aguirre for Frank Kim, present.
Wonderful. So we have quorum. Our meeting's called to order. Can I get a motion on the minutes? From anybody?
I'll move to approve. Tom Hammond.
You have a second, John?
Second.
Is there any discussion on it? Any corrections? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. Move on to item number three. The public financing calendar. Can I get a motion on the calendar, please?
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion on it? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, let's hope the next four items go smoothly.
I don't think so.
Okay, we'll move on to item number four. Approval of the $406 million bond series. Can I get a motion on that?
Before we do that, could I...
I want to discuss it.
I need to indicate that I need to recuse myself and step down from the podium because I am a party to the transaction as the county treasurer. So if that would be okay, I will recuse myself.
Is that going to be true for all three of them?
No.
Oh, just
does that affect our quorum status?
No, it does not.
Thank you. I'll move to approve.
Can I get a second?
I'll second.
All right. Discussion?
Yes.
Yes, we need.
I was just going to introduce the item. We do have a presentation if anybody would like to hear it. It's not required, but I was going to introduce the item and provide a couple of status pieces that were left over from last year's December meeting that we were directed to do some research and report back.
I have an administrative question.
Sure.
On the front page, budgeted NA, current year cost $105,000. What is that? Is that a typo?
That is the cost of issuance in the current year. Correct. That the current year cost, because we don't, the cost isn't incurred until beginning July of the next fiscal year.
Right. And so what was the $105,000?
That's bond council municipal advisor.
Just paying as they go. It's not the final. We haven't paid them in full.
We have not paid them yet.
Thank you. Answers my question.
Okay. Who are we going to have present?
Victoria Ross will be presenting, but if you'll allow me to introduce the item and just backtrack to the January 27th PFAC meeting, where the committee directed staff to review and analyze the long-term strategy to pay down the county's portion of the UAAL, or unfunded actuarial accrued liability, as part of the county's strategic financial plan. The analysis was conducted as part of the strategic financial plan that will be going to the Board of Supervisors to be considered at the December 12th board meeting. And I'll just provide a summary of that report that's in the county's strategic financial plan. For the analysis, and this was the acceleration of paying down the UAAL, and whether or not the county should pursue that strategy, or if it was feasible to pursue that strategy. The county set a target of acceleration of increasing the funding level of OSERS by 5% for certain employee rate groups or employee union groups that include general employees, which is most of the employees, probation department employees, and law enforcement employees. The target would have gotten these groups to funding levels ranging between 81.6% and 84%. The county requested that OSER's actuary, Siegel Consulting, estimate the additional level dollar annual payment that would be required to increase the projected funding level by the 5% for the target rate groups over a five-year period. In addition, county departments were requested to analyze their various funding sources in their programs to assess whether additional contributions toward reducing the liabilities would be reimbursable and even allowable under their program guidelines. So the results of that analysis, in order to achieve the targeted funding level over the five-year period, the county would have to contribute an additional $157 million annually to OSERS, of which $120 million of that would be required to come from the county's general fund. And so the following challenges in doing so were identified, which would limit the county's ability to achieve the targeted funding level over the five-year period. Number one, the general fund discretionary funding is limited, and the funding priority is for county mandates that currently exist. The applicable guidelines for many of the program funding sources do not allow for advance payment of unfunded pension liabilities. And there are numerous county programs that have limited funding, which is currently being maxed out or fully utilized to cover the existing service levels. And last, additional sources of funding, such as like program user fees, would have to be increased to cover the additional payments towards the unfunded liability. And then there's charges to contract partners. The first one that pops in my mind is sheriff contract cities. Contract partners would have to be their costs increased to cover additional contributions. So in summary, due to these challenges faced by the county, a plan to accelerate the payment of the unfunded pension liability is not feasible at this time. I'll stop there for a moment to see if there's any questions.
I'm not sure I'm following you through all this. As I understand, what you're saying is that the objective is to get the unfunded liability to 81 to 84%. Is that correct?
The funded status.
The funded status, 81 to 84%. Is that good or bad compared to our peer counties and municipalities around the state?
I'm trying to. I don't know if. Michelle, if you have information at the tip of your...
Yeah, Tom, I don't recall the funding status of various other organizations, but 80% is considered a sufficient or adequate funding level, right? The 80-85%. And so that was something... I mean, we will be at that level, I would say, eventually anyway. We were just looking to see, could we arrive at that funding level earlier? And the numbers that Suzanne talked about, that was pre the recent changes that OSERS made. So, I don't know if you're familiar with those. There were additional changes that OSERS made that will go into effect in fiscal year 1920. So we have a change in the assumed rate of return from 7.25 to 7, change the inflation factor from 3 to 2.75. So those actually offset each other, but then implementation of the generational tables. So it takes a different look at the length of time that people are living. So that will increase the cost of retirement and unfunded liability. The analysis that we did, you know, was at a certain point in time, and we just have, it was based on OCFA, because OCFA has their snowball strategy, and so we wanted to do that analysis, see if it was a possibility for us, but we're a much more complex organization than OCFA, so it's not that we're,
excuse me, what is OFCA? Yeah. OCFA?
Orange County Fire Authority.
Okay.
So, at this time, the ability for the county to make additional contributions to the retirement system to pay down the unfunded liability early. It's not feasible for us at this time. But keep in mind, we do have things in place. OSERS modified the amortization period from 30 years to 20 years. We have Measure J in place, which means, you know, any enhanced benefits have to go to the voter, so highly unlikely we ever have that, right? And then we have PEPR in place. So we're already starting to see positive impacts from staff turnover, PEPR.
I'm sorry, PEPR?
PEPR, Public Employee Pension Retirement Act. I don't remember exactly what the Reform Act, thank you, which went into effect January 2013, which lowered the retirement benefit for new employees. So there are things already in place. One of the, you know, we don't, it's, as I say, it's much more complex. The county has various rate groups. So we have our general rate group two. We have rate group six, which is our probation unit. And then we have rate group seven, which is law enforcement. We also have rate group one, which is AFSCME. I know, as I say, it's really complex, which AFSCME, it's mostly our eligibility workers, which are, they never went to the enhanced benefit. They're already sufficiently funded. I think they're at about 82% already. So part of our challenge is, even if we had general fund monies available to make additional contribution, how do you apply it to the various rate groups? And then is it even appropriate to make those additional contributions when it's not even a county obligation? Maybe it's a federal obligation, or like Suzanne said, it's a contract city obligation. So we're going to continue to look at it, but we may just have to do it a different way.
Well, what level are we at now?
So last year we reported, OSERS operates on a calendar year, and so last year we reported a funding status of 71.72% for 2015. For the year ended 2016, December 31st, 73.06%.
So it dropped a little bit.
Good.
So, and trying, Ms. Lester, trying to follow up with what you said, it's not feasible to increase the funding amount at this time.
To accelerate beyond.
To accelerate to try to get to 80 to 84%. Is that what you're saying?
Right, to accelerate beyond what we're already contributing, which is the full required amount.
And
maybe they come up with something a little more complicated, Tom.
And the supervisors are okay with this, or they can't do anything about it. Is that the essence of it?
Well, they're briefed on the strategic financial plan and the findings of the analysis. They'll formally consider it next Tuesday at the board meeting. But they've all been fully briefed, and I know Michelle has attended the briefings.
Well, we're actually in the process of briefing the supervisors on the strategic financial plan. We've completed one of those briefings. They'll be through the rest of this week. And they understand the nature of our challenges and the complexity. And, you know, basically letting them know the same thing that I just presented here today, that it's much more complex. Two of our Board of Supervisors sit on the OCFA, the Fire Authority Board. So they're familiar with their snowball strategy, and we've talked about it for a number of years. And they understand the difference between OCFA and the county, and that we will continue to look for ways, but that we do already have things in place to help manage that unfunded liability.
Is that a written presentation you're making to the board?
Actually, it's the document itself. So it's the 2017 Strategic Financial Plan. It's already available on the county's website with the board meeting materials. The section that Suzanne presented today is in the executive summary section of the report. So feel free to take a look. Give us a call with any questions that you have about it.
Yes, it's, I believe it's agenda item 39, and it's page 12 through 14 of that document. It's a big document.
Thank you.
As compared to the light reading that we got.
I just got done reading.
Exactly.
Okay, do you want to move on to the...
And then I just thought I had updated this orange spreadsheet in your packet just to, you know, keep you updated on the benefits of the savings to the county that this pension prepayment program provides. And I just wanted to provide one more update. I think I had updated OSER's performance through September 2017. It was 11.03%. I went to the OSER's investment committee that meets monthly last week, and they reported out that through October 31st, 2017, their year-to-date investment performance was 12.2%.
That's a significant growth.
Just wanted to provide that update.
12.2. Thank you.
And so if there aren't any further questions, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Victoria Ross to present the agenda item.
On a little housekeeping, you noted when Carl made it in?
Yes, I did.
Thanks. We don't want to forget you, Carl.
Thank you very much. Glad to be noticed.
My presentation will be very short, given the fact I already know there's two votes. So, I'm just joking. So item number four is to approve recommending the Board of Supervisors the issuance of the county's 2018 short-term pension obligation bonds in amount not to exceed $406 million. As you recall, on September 7th, PFAC approved recommending in concept the issuance of the pension obligation bonds to the Board of Supervisors, and the Board did approve in concept on September 26th. OSER's rate of return is 4.5%, same as last year if we fund by January 16th of 2017. The gross savings is $18 million, an estimated net budget savings of $11 million. The interest rate is a not to exceed 3%. However, we estimate it to be actual somewhere around 1.93%. The bonds are expected to be structured with four fixed rate maturities, estimated yields from 1.62% on the shortest maturity to 2.03% on the final maturity in April of 2017.
Does that take into effect the proposed quarter point bump coming from the Fed this month?
Yes, the 3% or the 1.9?
1.9.
The 1.9, we anticipate that it might be slightly higher, maybe in the low 2%.
Yeah.
The four fixed rate structure is slightly different than last year. Last year, we did a five fixed rate maturities, and we've changed that and made it four due to the county's increase in available cash and to save some interest costs. Certain departments have opted out, and they're financing on their own due to their own having sufficient funds available. OC Waste Recycling, John Wayne Airport, certain funds within the CEO, OC Community Resources, Registrar of Voters, Sheriff Coroner, and OC Public Works. So paying directly is about $30 million, reducing the financing to $375 million. And the board will hear this item next Tuesday, December 12th. Any questions?
Yes, two questions.
Great girl.
The 3% rate ceiling, if you could comment on best practices of other counties in terms of how much widening in rates people seek approvals, because that would be a 50% increase in the cost. It would be a very different market than what we have. And then my second question is, what would be the savings under the 3%?
This is Suzanne Lester, CEO of Public Finance. You know, the 3% is, we had to pick a not to exceed. What I would say is, if there was an increase, a significant increase in interest rate, we would really reevaluate and we would run numbers. I mean, we will continue, our municipal advisor will continue to run numbers to the day of pricing. And if it were not going to be a savings for the county, we would not complete the transaction. So to answer your question, I don't have a specific number on the 3%.
But you're only,
advisor here today? Could the advisor maybe comment on those? Two questions?
David Brodsley with Canon. You know, I can't do that in my head. I might be able to do it on a spreadsheet while you're all talking to give you an answer sort of informally. But you would still have a spread between the 4.5% discount rate and the 3%. And this wasn't a scientifically derived number. It made sense that if the spread got much more narrow than that, the program should be reconsidered. Whether or not it's 3%, 275, even 250, wasn't parsed that carefully. And right now it's a little under 2.1% in the market as of yesterday. That presumably takes into account the expected Fed increase at this point, since it's just maybe next week. But it's who knows what happens in interest rates. So we could do a quick calculation, try to figure out what the difference is if it were at 3%, but given the spread, you would have savings that are still significant.
You're only talking till January 18th, correct?
Yes, I think it's earlier than that.
The pricing, I believe, is scheduled for January 3rd.
January 3rd, so really 3 weeks.
Yeah, so I think the exposure, The world can be a mess, but I think you're pretty within the realm of it. But it would be, I'll try to get you a number as to what 3% might look like. I just can't do that off the top of my head.
Yes, Tom.
I know we have a extraordinarily capable treasurer in this county, but what I'm interested in is since the treasurer is buying these bonds, what is the methodology for making sure that we're paying the right amount of money vis-a-vis the market conditions?
Can we take that?
Yeah. Are you happy to?
Sure. That's part of what our job is to do that. And what we do is we look at the historic spreads, and then we look at what is going on in the taxable market. The taxable debt, which this is always spread to Treasury. So a certain component of it is very objective as to what's going on in the Treasury market the day of pricing. But the spread is a matter of market movement. So we look at comparable transactions. Sometimes there's more data than less, and then make a recommendation as to what we think the appropriate spread would be in the market. And there's a conversation between the treasurer and the CAO, both taking sort of the opposite side of the trade, and usually it has not been very difficult to come up with what is an appropriate and transparent interest rate.
It's a peculiar negotiation, isn't it?
Well, in a way, it's not unlike any negotiation. One side wants rates to be lower, one side wants rates to be higher, and you try to provide information so that what the right answer is clear to both parties.
Okay. Are you satisfied with that process?
Yes, I think it's worked well, and I think yeah. And we actually give a written certificate of what of our opinion. So yeah. we put that in writing for the campaign.
Does Mr. Kim get involved in this? Does he approve of this methodology?
Well, in our discussions with him, yes, he is aware and concurs with the treasure tax collector purchase.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I might just add, and our treasure tax collector may want to speak to this, but she and her investment staff do their own due diligence on the pricing, independent of our municipal advisor. Our municipal advisor, while they are advising the county, they do provide a fairness certification as to the pricing process, but I know that the treasurer tax collector is not solely relying on that.
Thank you, Ms. Lester. Chair Roediger and members of the committee, what we do is we independently look at what our investor needs are. We come up with what we believe the pricing would be for us to buy comparable in the market. So we're independently looking at those, because if we didn't think it would be good for our investors, which include the county, they include the school districts, they do include other voluntary pool participants. So it is something that is very important to us, because I have a fiduciary responsibility to all of those. We do have a slightly different approach that we look at than the county's consultant, which is great. It gives us some opportunity to look at some different ideas. And in the past, it has been where we have come down, we've talked about some items, and we've always come to what I think is a fair price for both sides. Of course, you know, we're, as he said, are always looking for making sure that we're getting the best value and making sure we're not overpaying or underpaying for those, and certainly the county from their perspective. So it has been an efficient process that I think has been fair for our investors, and certainly it sounds from the county side that they've been happy with that process also.
Is there a material number that you would look at for return for another county versus ours? Is it a 16th, an 8th, quarter? In making that decision,
you know, the county's ratings, which I'm glad to say has been improved over the last several years as they've built up their reserves. And of course, as your ratings improve, that means that your spreads are going to tighten. You're not going to have the wider spreads that a lower rating would have. So we certainly have seen those. And when we look at the market, we look at those comparable spreads. So that's a factor of what we look at. Of course, we have to look at what's allowed in our investment policy. Also, every county may have a slightly different investment policy of what their ratings are, because they may go to lower ratings. But we certainly look at those high quality ratings, and it has reduced a little bit of that spread, but it's a good thing for them. And we don't normally buy a lot of municipal debt because it does take a lot of time. They're one-time deals. You have to know a lot about the issuer. So it is not something we have a lot of in our portfolio. So when we look at this, we do look at it very carefully to make sure that our investors are getting the best value we can provide based on what current market rates are.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I'm personally pleased with it. I like looking at the seven-year returns and the current projections, and it seems to make sense in general, not commenting on the incredibly complicated pension fund itself. Are there any further questions of the board? All right, then I'll call for the question on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion approved unanimously. We'll move on to item number 5.
If I can, the answer to your question is you'd lose about $5 million of the savings if it went up to 3%. That's sort of back of the envelope.
$6 million then.
Oh, and Victoria, David, and Phil, if I could get your cards before you leave, I'd appreciate it. Oh, and whoever else is here speaking today. Okay, can I get a motion on item number 5, the special tax revenue bonds in the amount of $65 million?
I'd like to have a discussion first.
Well, I want to discuss it too. I just would like to get
a motion
on it. So can I get a motion from anybody?
So moved.
Can I get a second?
I'll second for discussion purposes. It sounds like there are some questions, but that certainly gets us started.
Okay. So just off topic for a second, and this may be a little different than what we're accustomed to. On the other boards that I serve on, we typically make a motion and a second. Then we discuss it, and we either modify the motion or shoot down the motion altogether, mm-hmm. or something along those lines. But When I'm making this, or when I'm asking for a motion, I'm not saying, hey, let's just rubber stamp it and shoot it through. I want to discuss it and vote on it. Okay, so having made that motion, do we have a speaker?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to invite Lewis McClure, the Public Finance Manager, to present this item.
Thank you, Suzanne. Good afternoon, members of the committee. This item is the refinancing of three community facilities districts in the area of Ladera Ranch for interest rate savings. And the purpose of these financings is really to pass along that interest savings to the taxpayers in the district in the form of lower millage use taxes. And so in this particular instance, we took three CFDs and combined them together to achieve economies of scale and efficiencies in the issuance. And so the bonds are currently outstanding, have interest rates between 4.25 and 5%. And we expect the yields on the new bonds to be from between 1.3% and 3%. So that affects the savings. It turns into about $8.8 million over the remaining life of the bonds, which translates to approximately $231 per parcel per year in Belarus savings. And I wanted to clarify what Suzanne and Victoria mentioned earlier, a lot of sections of the staff report and the attached resolutions include maximum amounts that we give us ourselves a little flexibility in case market conditions change. But in this case, if you look at the staff report in the middle, there's a chart that has the amount we actually expect to issue based on the latest number runs and interest assumptions. One thing that isn't really in the staff report, we talk about that we talked to the rating agencies, I think on December 1st. We did get our report back, and based on growing assessed values, improved value to lien, and low delinquencies, they assigned a rating to this deal of A-, which for reference is actually an upgrade because the old bonds were BBB+. So that was great news. The concept of this refinancing was approved by the board and PFAC back in September. And if approved today, the board will hear this item next Tuesday.
Do you have a question? On the three that you're combining into one, was there any change in any of the language other than the rate? In other words, are they callable? Has anything been changed?
So what we do is we combine all the bonds together in an authority level document. Right. And I'm assuming at least some of the terms probably changed, but most notably the length, the maturity did not, or none of the substantial terms I don't believe changed. It's only little like ticky-tack things.
Such as?
Members of the board, Lawrence Chan from Stradling Bond Council. And the basic structure is the same, but as far as terms relating to these bonds, these will be different from the old ones. Pricing, redemption dates.
Are they callable versus non-callable, or?
The new bonds?
Yes.
They will be callable.
And the old ones?
The old ones are callable as well.
Is there a term call?
A term?
Is there are they callable at a certain point, or are they callable, period, anytime?
That will depend. Depend on price.
Apparently not.
Tag team. Good afternoon. I'm Sarah Brown from Stiefel. We're serving as the bond underwriter. The bonds will be callable. The existing bonds are callable now. In fact, they've been callable since 2015 on any date. So when we go to sell the new bonds, we'll set a new lockout period for the callability. That's a requirement that investors want. The typical lockout period is 10 years, which would suggest that the bonds wouldn't have an optional call until 2027.
Does that affect the pricing compared to the ones that are callable at any time?
Yes, certainly, but it's part of achieving the savings. Sometimes with these bond issues, the Melrose bonds, the homeowners have an ability to prepay their special tax, and so we're really cautious about how the that prepayment provision for an individual would change, because that's something obviously you all care a lot about, is, you know, what do your constituents, the homeowners, see in terms of their ability to prepay out of the CFD if they chose to extinguish that Melrose tax on themselves. But these CFDs were set up with no prepayment provisions, so that aspect of it doesn't change. This is just the optional call that allows for the county to invoke savings. And again, the typical call feature is 10 years. You know, there's a little bit of incentive in the coming year, I think, with tax reform, that maybe we would be able to shorten that lockout period by a year or two. But these bonds only go out to 2031. So
starting in 2029, the first one fall off.
Yeah, the first phase of Ladera Ranch CFD 99-1, those bonds end in 2029, and then the 2000s end in 2030, and then the last ones in the final year. So they don't go out too long beyond that 10-year lockout period. Not sure if that, in terms of the other fundamental changes of the
of the credit, like the foreclosure provisions and all those sorts of things, all those other terms are the same as the existing bonds.
Lois, are these Mark Roos payments, are they covered under the Teeter program?
Yes, they are, sir.
All right, so delinquencies get picked up by Teeter.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Ladera, as in Newport Coast, did you go through this reassessment lien thing process?
No, we don't do that in the CFD world. We just refinance. The way the Mark Roos structure is, you've got these authority bonds that whose proceeds are used to purchase three series of the local obligations, which are those three series of CFD bonds. We don't go through a reassessment. Instead, Mello Roos law requires certain things to occur when you do a refinancing, and the big one is that the debt service has to be lower and you can't go out further. So it's a little bit different. It's actually easier in the CFD world than in the reassessment world, because you don't have to worry about the par amount of the bond issue. The par amount can be different so long as the debt service that an individual would be paying under the new bond issue is lower than the debt service or the special tax that they're paying with the existing bonds. And as Lewis mentioned earlier, right now we're projecting about on the average each homeowner would save roughly $230 per year.
And how many roughly homeowners is that, about 1,300?
No, there's about 1,000 in each of the three, so it's about 3,000 homeowners.
Okay.
And the upgrade into the from BBB plus to A minus is a big, you know, accomplishment. The S&P is very stingy with their A level ratings, so you know, the group, especially Suzanne, led a really good job of describing the credit. So we're very pleased about that accomplishment.
Seems like every time we discuss these, we're saving hundreds of dollars by now that we should have wiped these things out. Okay.
Sherry, you got a question?
Sherry?
Thank you, Chair Roediger. Just a couple of questions on it. First, I think you did briefly mention the tax law changes that are being, you know, reviewed. That does change some of the, I think, advance refunding. So I'm not sure if that would, you know, affect something going forth on any callable bonds if they were included in this, or if that would still be allowed, because certainly, you know, any change in the tax law that would make a change might increase the interest or change. Are you aware of any changes that would affect this? And I'm not sure what date we're looking at this for. Is this a January date, probably?
That's correct. But these are current refundings.
So it's just the advance refundings that are being excluded from one of the proposed laws.
That's right. These bonds, the 2005 bonds, are callable on any date. So we'll always have an ability, you know, we don't have to worry about that provision of the proposed tax reform. But you're right in that there are provisions that of the Tax Reform Act that are going, we think, you know, based on what we know and here on CNN and other places, think will impact the bond market. So, you know, it's something that we are conscientious of as we enter the new year in the municipal market in January.
Right. And then, Ms. Lester, if we were to have a lockout period and rates were to change, or the counties, they were to upgrade the ratings, any advance refunding couldn't be done on those. So a lockout period would be important. Is that another aspect that would be considered in that structure? Because then if rates were to change, but then by the time the actual, you know, you were able to call, rates had changed back up, that would be a downside on it. Is that correct?
That's
a possible
correct.
Downside.
Yes, possible.
And with that, I do want to congratulate you guys. It's great to see the ratings presentation you made was very effective. That is terrific to go from the BBB to the A-. That's really a huge change. And certainly what, you know, in looking at it, when I look at the current current structure has a callable structure, and I'm not a big fan of callables because you should price them at the rates they are. Right now, rates are at generally all-time lows. So why do you want to go back and have to spend costs of issuance, have to spend county time? If you can get the lowest rates today without having that callable structure, it certainly is better, because you then have to go back and you've got to come to PFAC, you've got to go through a lot of things to do it. And so I've always been a fan of trying to not have callables unless they're absolutely necessary, because on a callable you're also paying generally, most of the underwriters like to pay a higher rate. That's what they want their investors to have, and the underwriters working for their investors, they're not working for the county, and certainly the county is trying to get that total interest cost. So when you have a premium built in, it's a rate higher than the market. If that bond gets called, you've already paid the 3-5% interest rate for those years, so it does raise that interest cost, in total. Obviously, if you do hold it to maturity and there's no calls, then really that interest cost has changed. So I'm not a huge fan. I would certainly, with the ratings increase and going from Mr. Lewis, going down to a 1.3 by 3.0 is great. I didn't realize the rates were as high as 4.25 to 5. So hopefully that would provide enough savings to perhaps not have some of the callables. I know the structure is not before us, and I'm certainly supporting this. We need to, this is the time we need to do the refundings, definitely get those dollar savings. In this case for the CFD, the savings go to the taxpayer. They aren't coming from the county. So again, I applaud CEO Public Finance for taking this on, because it's not going to benefit the county at all. It's really going to benefit all of those taxpayers. And, I think it's very important that we are looking after them. So I want to thank you for that. So I guess in summary, I would like to see lesser calls or shorter lockout periods. I think that does provide savings. Hopefully you can see, maybe different examples that the underwriters can provide with your municipal advisors to say, so you can really see some of those truer costs and, a focus on, an ability to sell them more at current interest costs, because I do think that rates are certainly at all-time lows. I mean, we do expect the Fed to raise rates, but the curve is flattening. So that means certainly it continues to flatten. So it's a good time to be in the longer-term market. I think these are going out to, what period are they going out to? Is it
39,
so almost 40.
31.
Oh, 31. So still a substantial time. Yeah, the final maturity here of 2032, which was the same maturity. So I think still some substantial to take advantage of that flat curve out there. So that would be my comments. Thank you.
So, Sherry, you understand this pretty well, and this may be a question for them, but I'd like your opinion on it. Whose decision or at whose discretion is it to call them?
I think it's refer back to Ms. Lester, but it's a negotiation that certainly the county looks at what's in the best interest. Its municipal advisor is working for it as a fiduciary. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if I'm involved as the treasurer on some of the deals, I would then provide my fiduciary advice, and then they have the underwriter who, looks at selling the bonds. They need to get the bonds into the market. You don't want the bonds to be unsold, and so it is a little bit of a negotiation between how you structure it. And certainly I do that for the school bonds, so I'm not as involved in the county bonds, but making sure that you're keeping that total interest cost the lowest, and not trying to, whether you do a term or a serial bond also has different cost structures in it. So I think those are things that they would look at, and I would just refer to Ms. Lester to see if she has, other thoughts on how she handles it from the county side, because I am not as involved.
In this case, you're the ultimate buyer.
No. In this case, we won't buy any of these bonds. That was the POBs.
Right.
These, we normally don't buy any of the municipals, so I don't think we would probably be in the market for these. So I have no conflicts on them. It's not any plans that we have. I'm just talking about these bonds in general, because the underwriters got to sell them to either retail or institutional investors. They buy them.
The investors' decision on whether they want to call them or not?
No, it would be a structure that the county would decide. The county decides. They're going to get input from the municipal advisor and the underwriter, who may have, slightly opposing things. Plus, you have to look at the changes. What happens is these go on the tax roll. So the auditor controller will actually identify how much needs to be collected, or in this case, refunded from each of the taxpayers. And you don't want these huge swings, maybe, where one year you're paying this and another year you're paying a lot different. Right. You want some stability for the taxpayer. So there's a lot of items that might go into that structure.
So that's, I guess, what brings me to my question. So we're refunding or refinancing these things effectively at a much better rate in the taxpayer's savings. But what is the possibility that they get called in a couple of years because rates go up and the bonds aren't as attractive as they used to be? And whoever the investors are don't want these bonds. They want new bonds at a higher rate.
That's
10 years?
Yeah, that would be a put feature. That's called a put, where the investor has the option to put them back to you. But this is a call. It's called an optional redemption feature.
I see.
And it's completely at the option of the county when you
So it's
like
the county's option, which
absolutely just
they probably wouldn't want to do if...
If rates go up, then no. It's
right.
Purely if rates go down.
And I would just mention that the reason it would be called is because if they're sold at a premium, the current market rate might be 2%. But if they're sold at 3% 10 years from now, then since you didn't sell them at market, you would have savings because you sold them at a premium. And so if you sold it at market, it's just based on interest rates. If interest rates go up, but if you sell them at a premium, then you've given an additional cushion that if rates stay flat, there would be an incentive to call them because you would lose money. So I think it's
the only reason you want to call them is if you couldn't get rid of them.
The only reason you want to call them is if you can save money. I mean, you'd want to call whenever you could save money, but if you're selling them over the current market rate and rates don't stay the same, then you really would have no reason to call them the whole life. Okay. But if you sell them at a higher rate than the current market rate and the rates stay the same, then there's an incentive in 10 years to say, well, gosh, we're at 3% and the rate, the current rate is lower.
We can get the
discount on that. And certainly part of it is you're rolling down the curve also. So you would have a shorter period because you're calling in say 10 years, 2027.
Got it. Okay.
And so Mr. Chairman, just to answer your question, to let you know how the county goes about determining whether we're going to pursue one of these refundings and to call bonds. First, we determine that there's interest rate savings to be had, and best practices in the industry would say that you would want at least 3% savings in order to incur the costs and the staff time of going through the process. The county informally has a policy of at least 5% savings. We'd like to see more savings. So in this particular case, because these bonds are not going to be around that much longer, 2029 through 32, by the time these become callable again, we won't be able to achieve that savings in such a short term time of a couple of years to 5 years. So the likelihoods of these being called again is very slim. But we do look at the analysis, and we want to make sure that there's plenty of savings to be had in order for us to pursue this process. And that's when we do an RFP to bring a team on board and come to your committee for an approval in a concept to allow us to pursue.
Well, the concept of this one looks pretty good. It looks like it's going to save a lot of Ladera people some money.
That's right.
I'm not sure I quite understand this conversation, because these are not an obligation of the county. And the SOCPFA, South Orange County Public Financing Authority, is the entity that makes a decision to call or to refinance the bonds. And so is it the county's obligation? Is the Board of Supervisors group?
The board is the legislative body of the South Orange County Public Finance Authority, but it's not a county obligation. There are no county funds incurred in the cost.
Who makes a decision on the South Orange County Public Financing Authority?
The Board of Supervisors acting as the legislative
forever.
Body. Yes.
Forever. I mean, for 10 years or 20 years. I mean, as long as the bonds are outstanding, they are the board.
That's correct.
So it's the Board of Supervisors obligation and a fiduciary way to refinance these things when it's feasible? I'm just trying to figure out who the decision maker is here.
The Board of Supervisors is the ultimate decision maker.
Not the citizens of Ladera or anybody else.
They're acting on behalf of the citizens rather than on the county.
So the Board of Supervisors has an ongoing obligation to monitor all of these outstanding bonds and refinance them when it's appropriate.
A lot of busy work.
That's correct.
Do the citizens of Ladera are compensated to the county for doing all this work?
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. The cost of the issuance, the cost of our consultants, our staff time is part of the cost of issuance of these bonds.
Okay, I just have one last question. What is the cost of the bond insurance policy? Can somebody just give me a quick on that one?
Yeah. We haven't gotten the bids for bond insurance, but it's usually quoted as a certain percent of the total debt service. I don't know if you've got the.
Is it 1% or 10%?
It's more like it'll be something around 1% or less. Okay. It's usually in the, if I were to guess, I'd guess about 0.9%, 90 basis.
Okay, but then the follow up question. The follow-up question about feeling very proud that you increased the rating here. I mean, what the determinants of the rating are the quality of the real estate and insurance bond, and not the county of Orange, because Orange is not an obligation. I mean, it's the quality of the real estate, right? I mean, it's not the condition of Orange County.
There are several aspects of the credit that are part and parcel to the rating determination. Certainly, they look at three main things. First is the a debt service coverage analysis that they do. They look at certain fundamentals of the underlying credit, so each of the three CFDs, and that is like what you've described, you know, how much of it is built out? Well, in this case, 100%. What is the assessed value versus the debt on it? In this case, it's about 20-1. All of those sorts of things they look at. And then the third thing that's about 30% of the credit score is the economics of their region. And the use of the Teeter plan. And S&P has been notoriously poor on evaluating the Teeter and its value to the credit. They've sort of kind of poo-pooed that as a real credit strength. And I think, you know, Suzanne was helpful in really kind of putting that in perspective of what the Teeter program does for the county and that it's not something that they would be quick to give up. But it also, you know, in that other portion of that 30% is, you know, how is the economy growing? And certainly you're right. You know, here you've got, you know, consistent job growth. You've got home values that are appreciating. You've got all those things that are, you know, enviable throughout the country.
Yeah, but the financial condition of the county.
Financial condition of the county is irrelevant.
Okay, that's the point I was going to make. All right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So you did it because we live in a healthy economy and it's good real estate.
A booming real estate economy.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Are there any further questions of the board? All right, then I'll call for the vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried unanimously. Item number 5. And the many trees we killed to print this. Mm-hmm. Okay, item number 6. Can I get a motion for discussion on item number 6, limited obligation of refunding $32 million in bonds?
I will motion for discussion.
Can I have a second?
Second, Friedenrich.
Wonderful. Who will present for that?
Once again, I'd like to call Lewis McClure up to present this item.
Excuse me.
So this item is very similar in theory to the prior item, but instead we're talking about four groupings of bonds in the area of Newport Coast. And so in this particular instance, we're going to take the four different assessment districts and roll them all into one reassessment district consisting of 703 parcels. And once again, the bonds are currently paying interest rates of 4.6 to 5.75%. New bonds, about the same as the last bonds, 1.3 to 3.2%. So the savings here is estimated about $5.4 million total, but spread only spread across only 703 parcels. The savings is more about $660 per parcel per year. Same instance, we made presentation to S&P. Strong value to lien, diverse tax base, low delinquencies, strong household income in the area. This bond deal got assigned a rating of A.
Newport Coast, so what a surprise.
Yeah.
Very similar to the other deal we just talked about.
Average assessed value, $3.8 million. We were we pointed that out.
These guys won't even notice.
Yeah.
And what was the prior interest, our prior rating on this?
Oh, I don't believe this one was rated.
They were not previously rated.
Okay, so
these
it was
have not been refinanced yet. This is the first.
I have a question on the first page, where we show the date issued, the issuance, the amount, and the amount outstanding. If we start with the July 17th, 2003, with that $4,135,000,
right?
Are you with me?
Yep.
That's a 61.9% balance from the original issuance. And if you go 1 year, a little less than 1 year, it's 62.2%. But here comes the jump. Take a look at April 25, 2006, which is just approximately 1 year, 64.2% outstanding balance. And the one in 2007 is 67%. Can you explain why? I mean, I understand the year difference, but it's not, the symmetry is not there as far as year to year.
Well, when I looked at the, there's actually more groupings of bonds outstanding, and I think some, like for instance, the 2003 bonds,
yes,
some other bonds were rolled into that, so there's some kind of pooling and things going on that may have caused the irregularities. So like for instance, one bond would be issued and then would take out some of the other bonds.
It's hard to analyze it when we
right,
just have these facts.
Okay, right.
So you think that's what it is?
Yeah, when I went back to look at all of the bonds for this whole assessment district that were issued, there's two that we're not including a group five, but we're not suggesting that we refund those yet.
They don't show.
Do we know how long these bonds were originally, like the July 1703?
They're all have a maturity, original maturity of 2033, and we are not extending that.
2033. So it's 30 years.
And there is a group four that is not being refunded. It has a substantial amount of undeveloped property still owned by the Irvine Company, and it would drag down the others, so they weren't a good candidate to pool with these other groups to be refunded.
So these four are going to become one?
Correct.
And have you done the calculation what the percentage would be of the outstanding amount on the amount issued?
So my understanding what they do is they take the whole debt service and then they divide it among the parcels as if they were all just one big reassessment district. So they don't take into account the old bonds and groupings.
But yet they're going to roll these over.
What's that?
Yet they're going to roll these bonds over, is what you're saying.
Right. These will all be a obligation of the new reassessment district.
Right.
Correct. The total.
Pardon me. I've forgotten how this works. Explain to me this overlapping a debt with all these other districts. How does that fit into it? I forget.
Sure. So there's other entities in this area, like school districts and water districts and things like that, that also issue their own debt that we can't control. And so what the special tax consultant looks at is all of the debt that's attributable to a parcel, whether it's from the county, a school district, a water district, and then they take that into the total obligation of that parcel. And so that's why we make sure to take a look at the value to lien with all of the other debt included, because if we were only to look at our own, we could be not looking at something that was also owed upon the parcel.
There's no developer debt in here?
Not that I'm aware of.
So I'm looking here at the schedule of these districts, these water districts and so on, and the total of $30 million. But what's that got to do with our bonds? Anything?
I think it's more of just to make sure that we're not, that we have a value to lean that's appropriate.
Okay, so we're not, okay, it's got nothing to do with our bonds. I mean,
no.
Those entities issued that on their own, okay, their own behalf.
The other question I have is that we had this discussion before. Would you kind of explain to me as best you can briefly how this reassessment lien thing works? I mean, how do they come up with a reassessment lien numbers? I mean, is there a formula? How does that work?
There is a formula that our special tax consultant develops, and it's, I'm not sure. Jerry, do you mind? More tag team action.
This is Jerry Nguyen from David Tausig and Associates.
Hi, good afternoon. So the way it works is we look at the remaining assessment lien for each parcel within the district that is going to be reassessed, and we take the so let's say the outstanding bond for one conversion, let's say, is $20 million. I'm just come up with the number, for example. So let's say for one conversion, the original outstanding principal amount for that conversion is $20 million. Let's say when we refund that bond, the new par amount is $16 million. So that means each parcel with the conversion will be reduced by 80%. The $16 million is respreaded to each parcel in proportion to its original amount outstanding. So that's the methodology. Is everything is still tied to the original parcel lien amount. So the underwriter came up with, we have four conversions, the fixed rate, group one, group two, and group three. Right. And the underwriter figured out based on the resource available, what's the par amount would be issued for each group. And we take that dollar amount and re-spread it to each parcel within that conversion. I'll reassess each parcel within that conversion in proportion to its outstanding assessment need. So the example I give you is, let's say, the outstanding principal amount for parcels in group one, for instance, is $10 million, and the new par amount in order to refund that outstanding bond is $8 million. That means every all the parcels reassessment lien will be reduced by 20% or equal to 80% of the outstanding principal outstanding assessment lien.
If you look at the first one, the series 2003B, the amount issued was $6,675,000. Was that the market value in 2003?
That was the par amount. Which
page are we talking about? The first page of this agenda, item six. I know.
Right, so that was the par amount of the bond that was issued for that fixed rate.
Was that based on the valuation of the property in 2003?
That was based on the... it's not really based on the value of the property. It was based, my understanding is there were an assessment lien that was imposed on all parcels within the assessment district 01-1.
Okay.
And the assessment engineer at the time basically figured out how much of the assessment lien was allocable to the parcels located within that this fixed rate, the series 2003 group.
Wouldn't you agree if we went out and assessed that property today, 14 years later, that the value would be probably double?
But I guess this is not related to the assessed value.
It's not related to the assessed value. There is a lien established at a point in time, and then a assessment, proportional assessment placed on each parcel in those boundaries.
now in the refunding, because we're grouping them, you know, each parcel, it will still be reassessed a proportional value, but on a lesser amount, because we're able to refinance the bonds.
But this is not, the reassessment lien is not an indication of value.
No. So okay. the assessment district was originally established as a way to finance the public infrastructure that were necessary for the development of that area. And so what the assessment engineer did is they figured out how much was the total public infrastructure that can be financed by this assessment district. And then during each conversion, they figured out, okay, when we do the conversion back in 2003 for this portion of the property, how much of the public infrastructure that we want to finance. And based on that amount, we issue bonds per the amount that wants to be financed. So the bonds that were issued by the for that conversion correspond to the benefit or the public infrastructure that was financed by that for that conversion or for that group of parcels. So the 6.675, so bonds were issued, original bond was issued in the amount of $6.675 million.
Right.
A majority of that portion were used to finance the public infrastructure that were necessary for the development of that particular area. So we have now about 4.135 left in the principal. And this amount will be refunded and or reassessed to each parcel within that particular conversion. And let's say if the, so of the 4.135 outstanding for series 2003B, for instance, the new par amount is, the new par amount for the refunding bond is about 4.02. So that $4.02 million is represents the saving in the principal and also represent the interest in the saving. The $4.02 million will then be respread to each parcel within that particular conversion in proportion to each parcel's outstanding principal amount of the $4.135 million.
And will that be the amount issued going forward on the new?
I believe this is still a moving target. I think once we get code, and I think the underwriter would be better suited to answer that question, but I think it's a moving target. This is a conservative estimate, and you know, we probably will get a better number when we get closer to an actual bond issuance date.
But I guess what I don't understand, I'm looking at this column, and you have all these properties, and you have a column here called reassessment amount.
What page are you on, Tom?
Oh, there's 50 pages. Every property there is listed. It's in the, what is it listed in?
On the right hand side, it'll say.
Yeah. Like the county of Orange, reassessment district, yeah. So the question I have is that, like the top one I'm looking at says 36,000. Where did that number come from? Is that just the amount of the bonds divided by this particular property? Is that it? Or did you actually assess, change the valuation of the original assessment?
So if I can point you to Exhibit A1, for instance.
Exhibit A1? Okay.
So let's just pick the first parcel in that Exhibit A1.
All right.
So that particular parcel right now has about $24,000 outstanding assessment lien.
Wait a minute. Hold on just a second. A1?
Yes, A1. A1 is this 2003B.
Okay. I got it. Okay. So it says 24,600. Okay.
Right. And then if you go to the page 4 of that exhibit.
Page 52 is going to be the after the.
Page 4.
Right, 52. Page 4. And if you see on the end, you'll see the total unpaid assessment.
Yes.
You see the first column, the non-delinquent principal.
Yeah.
That's 4135. That matched the number that you see on the first page of your of the agenda report. Mm-hmm. So the 24,000, a little bit over 24,000 in the non-delinquent principal, represents the parcel's share of that current assessment need. If you add up all the non-delinquent principal, you will add up to $4.135 million on page four.
I got it. Okay.
So now, if I can direct your attention to Exhibit E.
D?
E as in Edward?
E as in Edward, yes.
Okay.
Okay, so now I can, if you look at the first parcel, which is the same parcel as the first parcel on the Exhibit A, A-1.
23928?
Yes. So you see how the principal has been reduced from 24,613
to 20. So it's lower.
Right, it's lower because we have now a lower, the lower principal.
Okay,
amount.
So essentially, what it is, you divided the number of parcels by the original bond issue, and now you got a new bond issue, and you reduce the basis.
Right, we
I got it.
Thank you.
Okay, I got it. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut anybody off, but I thought it was a reevaluation of some sort, but it's just a reduction in the lien outstanding.
That's
okay.
Correct.
All right, I got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Sorry to be so tedious.
Okay, very good. Yes, Sherry.
Thank you, Chair Roediger. So a couple things. One is I didn't see in the official statement. Is there an underwriter for this one yet, Ms. Lester? I don't see it in there, so I wasn't sure if an underwriter has been selected.
Yes, Piper Jaffray, and we have Katie Koster here from Piper Jaffray.
Okay, they just weren't on the official statement, so was that going to the board or not? Was it added after the POS was done?
I just don't think we have any logo on the POS yet.
Okay, didn't see it in the distribution list. I was looking at the distribution list. And I just didn't see it. So it was selected after the POS was done.
No.
On page 6 of 68. Did I miss them there and I just missed it?
6?
Page 6 of 68.
Page 2. Mm-hmm. Normally the logo of Piper Jaffray would appear at the bottom of the page.
I see it there, yes. I just thought it's in the... You know, in the distribution listing, I thought with the consultants and the trustees, maybe not. I thought on the last one it was. Just so that they know kind of the parties to everyone there. It's good for all of the parties to be noticed mm-hmm. and provided. So that was just one question. So that has been done. So I guess with this one, because, you know, we went through the example, and thank you, Mr. Hammond, where you've got that first person who's really going to recognize about $600, which is, I think, what Lewis had said. It seems like, you know, obviously in total it's a lot, but it seems like with the rates that it's not really providing that much savings per each individual when you're looking at a 30-year bond. And, you know, to go back to the question that was on the first issue, sorry, skipping around, you know, we started off with 6.675 and we're just down to 4.135, and that's been 14 years later. It seems like the rate interest rate must have been fairly high on it. It just seems like it's really not paid down if we're almost halfway through.
That was my point, Chair.
Right. I mean, that was, I was following up. It seems like something seems wrong because the others have paid down more. And again, I don't have the amortization schedule. But is there something that was different with that first one that it didn't pay down as quickly?
And I'd like to call Katie Koster from Piper Jaffray.
Good afternoon. Thank you. One of the things that we did with the reassessment report on this transaction, because assessment districts are a little different and we were combining this into a reassessment, mm-hmm. at the time that we did that, because of deadlines and the process with assessment districts, is we decided to be very conservative mm-hmm. in doing the new reassessment role in order to meet those deadlines. And so part of our assumptions were that we would meet the minimum savings test. And I believe in that particular case, it was 5% savings. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we reran our numbers for purposes of the meeting today to be able to give you a more current estimate savings.
Oh, great.
So this is going to be significantly better than what you're seeing in that reassessment report. So as of yesterday's market, and it has been a little volatile, these numbers do include about 25 basis points of cushion to yesterday's market. We're doing that because of the fact that we won't be pricing until after the first of the year. We expect to have a total interest cost of 2.85%. This deal is short. It matures 3-2 of 33, so an average life of about 8.8 years. Savings is expected to be about $480,000 annually, gross of over $7 million, NPV savings of $5.55 million. As a percentage, that's over 17%. And the actual per parcel average savings is expected to be about $678, or a range of between $500 and $827.
But that's not annually. That's over the
that
whole.
That is annually.
Okay, so that does. Okay, so it that's, is an annual savings.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that is annual. So that helps. So that makes, because I'm thinking if you're only going from a reassessment of $24,000 down to $23,000, but that's the annual amount that they're
that's
on the
correct.
On the report.
Those are very conservative numbers.
Right.
Prior to, because we had to get that reassessment in for purposes of the rolls.
Right.
That reassessment roll will be redone, amended after we have the final pricing numbers. So those numbers you'll see will go down.
Suzanne, could we get a copy? You can send it to us after the meeting.
The numbers of cash flows.
Yes. So we'll send out the updated cash flows that we have now. Of course, those will be changing, but we'll send those out after the meeting electronically.
And one thing, too, to note in those cash flows is, as in the prior transaction, we do anticipate getting insurance and at least a partial surety on this transaction. So that will drive even increased savings from what you'll see in this current cash flow.
Okay. Katie, several years ago, maybe even before Suzanne had this job, We had the Irvine company came in to refinance one of these districts. And for some reason, they got mad at us or whatever. But they just decided to buy the bonds. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, are those bonds in here?
No, they are not.
Okay. They're not.
Publicly held. They were sold. Originally, the program was that the Irvine company would come in and do variable rate debt on the larger assessment district before there was any vertical construction. Once the property had sold to end users and there was construction there, typically we would convert those to fixed rate bonds because we didn't want to have that variable rate on property owners. This is actually a refunding of four of those separate conversions for savings.
So they're not the Irvine owned bonds.
They are not. In fact, there is no Irvine company ownership within these four groups.
Okay, thanks.
That doesn't look right.
Right. Thank you. I might just ask, is there a proposed structure for these then also, Ms. Luster? Is that would be something that I think I know traditionally hasn't gone to the board. I know I take the school bonds that have to be approved by the board. I do put the structure there because they are very, you know, when they actually see what the principal and interest payments are, you know, and of course some of those, if they're initials, in the past they've had cabs and things. So it was very important to see how that amortization, is that something that, if you've already got it, could be provided at some point in future packets if we have a proposed structure? I think it's just helpful because then you actually understand what the whole package looks like, and then it's easier to, I think, for us to understand and maybe quickly go through because you're looking at it, or if there are some questions, those are questions. I know it's the timing of when you get the packet together, but if there is structure, I know that the ones I take to the board, it is helpful to have some of those there if the timing allows for that. So that would just be is there a structure proposed for this one already, and are there callables in it? Again, because of the time frame of if it's a 10-year callable, if you don't expect it to be called, I don't know, is the advantage of having that for your investors versus paying that? I'm just trying to understand when there's such a short call period after, what that advantage or disadvantage is to the county or the county on behalf of these owners of this property.
So currently the structure is all serials because of the short maturity in 33.
Mm-hmm.
We have at this point left the optional call provision blank, but we anticipate it to be a 10-year par call. Again, as was previously mentioned, that is very acceptable in today's market. We are seeing that some of our clients want to have the flexibility of a shorter call provision. There tends to be a bit of a premium that needs to be paid for that flexibility. It sounds to me that in this case, that's not the direction that you want to go in. What we would do is, prior to pricing, we would have a discussion with the county to evaluate what the cost would be if they want that flexibility, and we would allow the county to determine, you know, and the MA to give us instruction, and we would advise them what investors we're looking at, obviously, depending on the mix of investors we expect to participate in this transaction.
Right, because I understand that you've got to sell it to your investors, and the county wants the total interest cost. So if there's no call feature, they may have to pay a slightly higher interest rate for those because you don't have that option, you know, with that. But it is certainly, you know, looking at the best interest for the county side of the taxpayers they're representing on this, you know, CFD. And so, you know, obviously it's always a comparison, and you know, I'm not a big fan of the, what is the MID or what's the?
The any interest date call? Or
no, the, what's the interest rate you guys look up to?
That the MMD.
Yeah, the MMD. I just don't think it's very, it just doesn't give me a whole lot of comfort when I'm comparing it to the MMD. There's just not a lot of information that I think is relative as much. So it is that negotiation between the structure on it. And obviously, you know, I want to keep that total cost down as low as possible, but understand that, you know, the county needs to sell these and what is that rate difference. But I appreciate your listening to my prior input on the other and, you know, hopefully coming up with a couple of different options that you think are and understanding that you do have a responsibility to the county still in a fair pricing, even though you are working for your investors to look at that balance a little bit.
Absolutely.
Could you tell me what MMD stands for?
Municipal Market Data.
Thank you.
We're picking up all sorts of new acronyms. Yeah.
And I think the last question I had is just, you know, with the deductibility of the state and local taxes being, you know, not just for, you know, property taxes, state and income taxes, but all of those, how do we see that impacting this? I mean, in this case, it sounds like we're getting bond insurance, and
It's a very interesting question that we're keeping very close track of. You know, everyone who's in the industry has been watching the Tax Reform Act. The markets have been fairly volatile since the House legislation got approved and then now the Senate bill, and just watching very closely. I think one of the main components is the fact that advance refundings are assumed to go away because that was in both bills. Private activity bonds, there's still some question as to whether that might get negotiated back in.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a rush to the market for advance refundings because the thought is that even if a decision isn't made until after the first of the year, that it would be retroactive and potentially, you know, you couldn't get a qualified opinion in between time. But even with that glut of additional debt that's been out on the street, we have also seen investors who have cash to put to work coming into the market. Mm-hmm. And despite some initial headwinds that we saw at the beginning of last week, there was a significant rally earlier this week for those bonds. And analysts are suggesting that it's because investors are anticipating there's not going to be a lot of debt available come January, February, mm-hmm. because of the legislation. So it's very interesting to see that impact. It's hard to say longer term what that will do, but I think that we will be entering the market at a good time in January, early January, when there is not anticipated to be a lot of other debt out there and a lot of cash to be put to work.
Great, thank you. And just one last question with the, you know, with the possibility of the SALT going away, I'm not sure with this one, you didn't mention whether there was a prepayment ability for the taxpayer to pay off. And I know, at least I believe the Mello-Roos technically aren't deductible because unless it meets certain criteria, and you would have to go with your CPA to see if they meet that criteria or not. I'm not sure on the assessment district if those are deductible under tax law or not, if it's similar to the Mello-Roos or if it is a little different.
So in this particular case, there is a prepayment provision allowed with a premium initially at 103. for property owners to prepay. I have always been told, I'm not a tax advisor, you should, you know, talk to a tax person about
right.
the eligibility of being able to deduct the interest on it, but.
Right, and I guess the question I would have is, for both of the issues a little bit, I know we're seeing if the SALT goes away, the state and local tax deductions, a lot of people are looking to prepay their property taxes this year because it may be limited to the $10,000 next year. Again, I don't know if these are actually deductible. You know, my at least the Melrose, my understanding is they're not. I know at one point the state wanted us to start providing APNs to them to match up with the taxes so they could actually get the actual tax amounts, and then the citizens were supposed to put the APN on their tax return so they could say which of the amounts are they picking that didn't get done several years ago. I don't know if that will be anything they do in the future. But I guess the prepayments would just have another impact. You know, if people are starting to prepay these more, is that something that would impact that structure, and how would that happen? So I think it's just a different climate now with where taxes are that we need to be, you know, just be trying to keep as much on top of. And so I know that Ms. Lester does a good job of that, and we appreciate that with your advisors. So that's all my questions. Thank you.
So Sherry, the good news is if you lose your salt, we still have Michelle's pepper. Yes, Carl?
I had a process question, and I asked this before the last time. I think these are great financings. What is the process we've put into place to review these issues across the county? And do we have a process in place to monitor potential cost savings? Or I think the last time we talked about, there was a bit of a ad hoc where the vendors were kind of bringing mm-hmm. us these to go and execute. Have we implemented an overlay to mm-hmm. take a look at these to make sure that that people are in the right queue to mm-hmm. go through, and that we're prioritizing which of these mm-hmm. that we see? Has there been a process put in place to monitor this and look at this?
Thank you, committee. Suzanne Lester again from CEO Public Finance. We don't have a formal process in place. I mean, our debt management policy, the county's debt management policy in the debt administration section, you know, mentions that states that public finance will monitor the county's debt issuances. And I would say that in, you know, monitoring and prioritizing refinancings, that county debt is first priority. So when we're looking at, you know, workload and the coming year and the opportunities for savings, we're first looking at any county debt that the county is paying that might be eligible and a good candidate for refinancing. And second, I mean, the county does not have a lot of debt. We have probably the lowest debt profile in the state for a county, definitely our peer counties. And so then we have our CFDs and assessment districts. A lot of them that were issued in the 80s are rolling off. They're maturing. We've gone from over 25. I think we've reduced down to about 15. And so of those, you know, we're looking at, you know, standard 10-year periods of when our next opportunity is. And we do have our vendors coming in, all of them, at least every 6 months to present opportunities that the county might want to look at. So between those two things, I'm confident that we're well covered.
Just noticing the clocks. Apparently there's a time warp halfway across the room.
Mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Okay, are there any more questions of the board before we vote on it? All right, so since the last motion wasn't a motion to approve, can I get a motion on this?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Can I get a second?
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion unanimously approved. With that, we will move on to the public comment section of our meeting. Is there any members of the public that would like to speak? after this big crowd, no one wants to talk to us? All right, I would like to agendize Commissioner Hammond's memorandum for our next meeting.
I have one comment on it without getting into the substance of it. Mr. Hammond, on your recommendation on B, be effective for 2018, could we make that 2019 as our chairman has been a chairman for one meeting?
That's fine if we all agree. That's fine with me.
Thank you.
Okay.
But we only had one meeting?
Yeah.
So. That's it. My first meeting as chairman.
Oh, yeah. It's all right. That's fine with me.
Okay.
And so at our next meeting, at the January meeting, we will have on the agenda the selection of officers.
With the 2019 date?
Well, we'll be selecting officers for 2018, and right. And so there will be a selection of the 2018 officers, and then we'll have a separate agenda item, the discussion of the memo and any action that the committee might wish to take on the structure.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. Unless there's anything further.
To adjourn?
We will adjourn at 3:03 on my phone, not that clock.
Thank you for the
excellent presentations, everybody. And if possible, if I can get your cards before you leave.